It's really good to be here. The Sabbath is an absolute delight. Isn't it wonderful? We get to take one day off and really think about God and recharge our batteries. In our society today, we see many different types of lying and people misrepresenting things for their own agenda. Since relative morality has set in, people don't see the need to be truthful. However, when the chips are down, they can come to respect the truth. I think we've seen some examples of that. Lying distorts the truth. Truth is the only way people can live together. And that's what we'll talk about today. The title of this sermon is, Does Everyone Lie? Does Everyone Lie? Hopefully I can reveal some interesting aspects here for you that you may not have heard before. Things have changed in this world. So let's start with, what does the ninth commandment say? What does the ninth commandment say? Turn with me to Exodus 20, verse 16. We'll start there. It's a good starting point. Exodus 20 and verse 16. It says, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. It doesn't say you shall not lie. It says bear false witness. And I think it's important to say bear false witness because there are so many different ways to lie. And we will discover there are many different ways to lie. And it's way beyond just the core definition of lying, which is just saying a false statement. So let's start with what God sees lying, how God sees lying, what he thinks of lying. Proverbs 12, verse 22. What does God think about lying? When he sees lying, what stirs his heart? And what was that came up in the sermonette there about the
compassion?
The yearning in the bowels.
Yearning in the bowels. What's yearning in God's bowels? In Proverbs 12:22. It seems to fit with the sermonette very nicely. 12:22 says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. And then if you turn a few pages back to Proverbs 6, Proverbs 6 and 16 to 19. It's talking about the wicked man. It says, these six things the Lord hates, yes, seven, are an abomination to him. A proud look, here's what we're paying attention to, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, and we're also, I'm going to point out, a heart that despises wicked plans, feet that are running swift to evil, and 19, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. God calls lying an abomination. Merriam-Webster says abomination is an extreme disgust or loathing, which is beyond or worse than just hate, just extreme disgust and loathing. According to the Oxford Dictionary of Christian Church, lying is a statement not in accordance with the mind of the speaker, made with the intention of deceiving. In the Old Testament, the practice of lying is denounced as an attribute of sinners, though it's sometimes recorded otherwise for a righteous people. For instance, Abraham lied twice about his sister. We'll get into that. Jacob also was impersonating Esau. And David told the priests he was on a secret mission from Saul to get the showbread. We'll get into some of those. I will add some detail to those later, but keep in mind that lying, and even these biblical examples of them, had some serious consequences. Usually it does. The dictionary continues to say, that's the Oxford Dictionary of Christian Church, that in the New Testament the standard is higher. And lying is so abhorrent that for the disciple, a simple affirmation of the truth is to take place. Matthew 5:37 is what they say. It says, but in Matthew 5:37, let your yes be yes, and your no be no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one. And Paul, too, is continuing what the definition says here, exhorts Christians to put away falsehood. And in the book of Revelation, Paul, the virgins who follow the Lamb are praised because in their mouth was found no lie. That's Revelation 14:5. We have a high standard to keep here if we want to be there. So now we're going to look at four different categories of the ninth commandment. We'll need to be especially aware of these in this confused world we live in, because it's easy, very easy, to fall into some of these lying traps. When I get through, you'll understand when we get through. I have 9 ways, and this is, by the way, not all of them. I've got 9 different ways for you to lie. 9 ways to lie, and some of them you've probably never heard of, but have seen, and probably never really connect the dots that these people are really lying. So we have 9 ways. The first one is the easiest one, the one that you all know. Saying things that are untrue is the first way. That's the easiest one. The second one is being silent when an answer is needed to bring justice. Being silent, not adding your voice of an actual issue that would actually bring justice in a situation. The third one is one that's probably surprising, flattery. Believe it or not, flattery is also lying, by falsely building someone's ego. The fourth one is partiality. Being partial to some group or some person at the expense of others. There are some examples in the Bible. Deuteronomy 16:19. I'll read it to you. Deuteronomy 16:19 is, you shall not pervert justice, you shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. It's pretty easy to see that. Then I'll read you Exodus 23:1-3. In Exodus 23:1-3, it says, you shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in disputes so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. I think the key to these two scriptures is that truth needs to reign in all we do. Very simply, truth needs to reign in all we do. It's actually the easy answer to many of these. So now we're going to start to get a little complicated. Number 5 here is religious hypocrisy. Jesus Christ, when he was here on the earth, railed against the Pharisees for religious hypocrisy many times. I'm going to read you one scripture, but there's at least 3 scriptures that say this in the Bible. Matthew 15:8-9, and I'll read this for you. You'll recognize it. It says, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their hearts, I think the key here is their hearts, are far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. So eventually they're just a shell that looks good from the outside, but their hearts have nothing there to honor God. Then number 6 is to blaspheme. Blaspheme is the 6th way to sin. Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary says, blaspheming is the act of insulting or showing contempt or lack of reverence for God. It's the act of claiming the attributes of the deity too as well, pretending you're God. It's irreverence towards something considered sacred or inviolable. The easy answer to this one is that we need to revere God in everything we do, in every way. So that was six. Got a few more to go here. This one here is a word that I knew from my childhood that I haven't heard in many years, and they've started to say it a lot now. It's called slander. I remember learning about slander when I was a child. It seemed like most people ignored it, I guess. Holman's Illustrated Bible Dictionary says slander is to speak critically of another person with the intent to hurt. In a court of law, it means to falsely accuse another. Jesus said, "I tell you that on the day of judgment, people will have to account for every careless word they speak." That's Matthew 12:36. This should cause each person to be very careful about what they say about others. The Bible, and this is Holman's Illustrated Bible Dictionary, is saying the Bible shows that slander is a mark of an unregenerate world. So if you're seeing a lot of slander, we're not living in a very good world. And that's called out in James 4, verse 11 through 12, 1 Peter 2:12, and 1 Peter 3:16. Those are the scriptures that kind of back up that. We have to be aware that slander is very, very nasty. So now we're going to go into the new age. You're going to hear some words you've never heard before. Can anybody tell me what prevaricate means? Anybody tell me what prevaricate means? Has anybody ever heard this word? This is a brand new age. I've got some new words for you. Prevaricate, according to vocabulary.com, is when someone tells a lie, especially in a sneaky way. A child might use prevarication to avoid telling the whole truth about how the kitchen window got broken. While the noun prevarication is mostly just a fancy way to say lie, it can also mean skirting around the truth, being vague about the truth, or even delaying giving someone an answer, especially to avoid telling them the whole truth. In the 16th century, the word was used to mean going astray or stepping out of line. It comes from the Latin root word prevaricaria, which means literally means to walk crookedly. Merriam-Webster's, this is so we can understand prevaricate better. Merriam-Webster says prevaricate is to deviate from the truth, and its synonyms lie and equivocate all refer to playing fast and loose with the truth. Our society has gotten very, very creative in how to avoid being held accountable or even being caught in a lie. Lie is the bluntest of the three things here, but when you accuse someone of lying, you're saying that person was intentionally dishonest. No bones about it. Prevaricate is less accusatory and softens the bluntness of lie. It usually is implying that someone is evading the truth rather than purposely making false statements. I see an awful lot of this today in our society. Equivocate is similar to prevaricate, but it generally implies that someone is deliberately using words that have more than one meaning as a way to conceal the truth. I mean, little red flags go off when I see these kind of things in our news media and written material. I see these things happen. And I think we see a lot of this in our world today. You just can't nail down the truth because of the word salad used by some people. It sounds real good, but has no accountability to the actual truth. These are all new concepts that we never had to speak about 20 years ago. 30 years ago, these weren't very prevalent, but now they're everywhere. So now I got a brand new one that I've added just recently, because again, I keep hearing it used on TV, so I figured I ought to bring it up to you. And we're in a new age, gaslighting. All right, some of you have heard this before, gaslighting. Gaslighting, according to dictionary, is to manipulate someone by psychological and in ways that help that actually cause them to question their own sanity. You're using slander. It's slander on steroids, really. You're using a slander to cause them to question their own sanity. It's presenting a false narrative to another group of persons, which leads them to doubt their perception because they're disoriented or distracted by the way you're saying it. You're causing them to see things differently, but you're actually lying to them. The classic technique of gaslighting is to tell someone they're crazy and they're lying, but you are the only source of truth. But your truth is lie. I see this a lot, awful lot, being used as a tool in our society. Gaslighting is lying. That's my ninth one. So there's not only just nine. I only went through nine ways to lie. There are many ways to do it. You have to be careful of it in our society because people are doing it all around you and you may end up getting involved in it, not even knowing it. So now we're going to talk about the second category here, Satan. Satan is the father of lies. And just so you know, the title Satan or Diabolos can mean accuser or slanderer, which is a liar. John 8:44. Find out that Satan is the father of lies here. He's the father of it all. He's the first one to lie, and he's the one who's behind all the lying. John 8:44. It says, you are the father, you are of your father, this is Jesus Christ speaking, the devil. And desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. He's completely a lie. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. The dangerous part here is we have to ask ourselves the question, when we lie, are we aligning ourselves with Satan? If he's the father of lies and we lie, aren't we children of the liar? We have to be careful of that and watch for that. 2 Corinthians 11, please. Second Corinthians 11, 13 and 15. 13 to 15. People who consistently lie or use lying to further their agenda do not help themselves. 2 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15 says, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose ends will be according to their works. There's a lot of lying going on, and a lot of it is done to make people look good. They come across like they're saviors, almost, in what they're doing because of the lies. And what's even worse is some of those people truly believe their own lies. They say enough, they believe it. 1 Timothy 4:2. They say it enough to themselves. They say it to other people. They build houses of straw built on lies. And they start believing it. And they just don't understand why you don't believe it too. 1 Timothy 4:2. They're speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their own conscience. That means there's nothing left in them to cause them to even see that they're lying. Seared with a hot iron. It's like a catharsis. they don't have the ability anymore to see that they're lying, 1 Timothy 4:2. So in the first two categories that we covered so far, we can see there are many ways to lie, and that Satan is the father of lies. Now we'll look at the next category, which is biblical examples of lying in the Bible. It's easy to fall into the trap of lying, and even some biblical people who we have high regards for had some lying in their backgrounds. So let's turn to Genesis 3:4. Of course, this is the most, you call it foundational one. Genesis 3:4 says to Eve, "Then the serpent said to the woman, 'You will not surely die.'" Satan, the father of all lies, and she believed him. "You shall not surely die when you eat the apple." Well, she ate the apple, and sure enough, that was meant she became, she was still mortal and kept being mortal after that. God's intention was that Adam and Eve would eventually grow and mature in understanding and in faith and eat from the tree of life and live. He was trying to create a new world here. But Satan got involved and changed all that. So then he became mortal and died. The second case of lying we have here is with the Israelite midwives. When Israel was in captive in Egypt, they lied to protect the male babies of Israel, and they did it risking their lives. The accounts in Exodus 1 17 through 21. Many of us know this account. I'll read only a portion of it. "The king called for the midwives and said to him, 'Why have you done this thing?'" I'm reading verse 18 of Exodus 1. "And saved the male children alive." Now they're going against what the Egyptian pharaoh or king told them to do. "And the midwives said to Pharaoh, 'Because the Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwives come to them.'" That was a lie. That's not what they were doing. They were saving male children alive, period. And then verse 20, it says, "Therefore God dealt with the midwives, and the people multiplied and grew very mighty. And so it was because the midwives feared God that he provided households for them too as well." You see, they respected and revered God the Father, and they decided to not follow the instruction of the Pharaoh and save the lives. The common theme you're gonna see is people who do that also put their lives at risk where they could be killed too as well. So fearing God at the risk of their lives when violating human instruction is rewarded. Rahab also lied to protect the spies of Israel, risking her own life. That's Joshua 2, verses 4 through 13. "The woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, 'Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from.' And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out, and where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them,' is what she told the guards. And she sent the king's men on a wild goose chase when she was hiding the Israelite spies upstairs." Why? Why did she do that? Because she had a deep, deep faith. And that you can see, Joshua 2, verse 9. "And she said to the men, 'I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you, for you have heard how, we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on either side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted, because neither did there remain in us any more courage in any one of us because of you. For the Lord your God, here's what she says in verse 11, he is God in heaven above and on earth below. She had great respect for God. Now therefore I beg you, swear to me in the Lord, since you've shown the kindness to do a true token and save my family from death. But she had true respect and put her life on the line to save those two. And she was even commended for it in Hebrews 11:31. I'll read it to you. She was commended for it. It said, by faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she received the spies in peace. So we had those two examples that we went through, of Rahab and also the Israelite midwives. Now we're going to talk about Abraham. Abraham lied twice, calling his wife Sarah his sister, and realized too that she, you know, there's a lot of controversy over the whether she really was his sister or not. There's also discussion about how at that time men could make their wives sisters to get a bloodline. I mean, there's a lot of different discussions, but put all that aside, lying means that you got to tell the whole truth. And he feared that men would kill him because of his wife's beauty and take her, and realized that in both those instances the kings did take Sarah. And that saying no to a king in those days could mean instant death. The kings were also superstitious, and that was making it difficult for people like Abraham and his son Isaac to foresee what would happen to a traveler with no standing in the king's kingdom. Because you're traveling different kingdoms, they don't know who you are, and you come into their kingdom, they don't know who you are, and you don't know what they're going to do. Abraham's faith seemed weak in this situation, but all the commentaries say that we should not take that out of this situation. We should not feel that he was weak and it was awful. We should look at how strongly God intervened to protect the promises that he made to Abraham and also to Isaac. He really, he made the Pharaoh very sick. He made also Abimelech, the Gerarian king, made him sick too as well. And that with these mistakes, Abraham and Sarah grew in faith. Please be aware too that even David performed this deed to take Bathsheba. He killed her husband Uriah in battle. And he suffered greatly as the consequences of that. And I think that's the message that you get from a lot of these examples, is that even though some of these people in the Bible lied, there were a lot of consequences. And they were very severe. Genesis 12, verses 10 through 13, talks about Abraham going to Egypt. And actually, it's 10 through 19. Genesis 12, 10 through 19 talks about it. Then Genesis 20, in verse 2, it talks about Abraham going into Gerar, which is a settlement on the west side of Israel. And Abimelech, the king there, also sent and took Sarah, and the same situation happened. He found out that she was early married to him, and then said, oh no, you better leave now, and give him gifts to leave. And then Isaac, his son, didn't even learn from his father. He did the same thing with the same king. The king of Gerar, which was Abimelech, in Genesis 26, verse 9, Isaac told him that Rebekah was his sister, and then he was found out. And the king reacted and, again, kicked him out of the property, kicked him out, and gave him all sorts of things. He said, you know, you would have brought great sins on us. They're very superstitious. So, again, there were big consequences as a result of those. Now, the sixth example I have here is with Jezebel. Many of you probably can remember Jezebel. She lied to give her husband Ahab, who was king of Israel at that time, or maybe it was Judah, the vineyard he lusted for next to his property. After being told no, he went to Naboth, the owner, and says, hey, will you give me this vineyard? It's right next to my property. And Naboth said no. And Ahab just, you know, lusted over this thing for a long time. And so his wife came up with an idea. Jezebel said in 1 Kings 21, verses 9 through 10, she wrote a letter to the people and said, proclaim a fast. Seat Naboth with high honor among the people, and seat two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, you have blasphemed God and the king. In those days, that meant you get stoned. Then take him out and stone him, that he may die. So she set up a lie, and it was successful. They got the property. I guess on the very day of it, the consequences were very severe. Both Ahab and Jezebel paid with their lives. There's a long, twisted story with how that all happened. You're welcome to read it if you'd like. You can go to 1 Kings 21, 9 through 10. But this is just the beginning of a series of consequences, because then the next consequence comes in my example 7 here. King Jehu, who's the king that followed Ahab, he lied to attract all the worshipers of Baal so he could kill them and destroy Baal worship in Israel. Now, Ahab's the one who set up the Baal worship and actually built the Baal temple and really instituted it in Israel. So removing Baal worship was a big deal for Jehu, who's trying to bring Israel back to God. So removing Baal worship was important. And this goes back to, again, this whole issue of Ahab. And in 2 Kings 10, 18 through 28, it documents how the worshipers of Baal were killed. Jehu gathered all the people together and said to him, Ahab served Baal a little, Jehu will serve him much. Now, therefore, call to me all the prophets of Baal, all his servants, and all his priests, and let no one be missing, for I have a great sacrifice for Baal. Whoever is missing shall not live. But Jehu acted deceptively with the intent of destroying the worshipers of Baal. Again, you can see the severe consequences for lying. People in the Bible were not perfect. We are not either. Lying can come upon anyone. And these are examples and lessons to us. And the final one I have here is David. Even David lied. He lied to the priests of Nob, saying he was on a secret mission from Saul to obtain the showbread for he and his men. 1 Samuel 21, verse 2. So David said to Ahimelech, the priest, the king has ordered me on some business and said to me, do not let anyone know anything about the business of which I send you, or what I have commanded you, and I have directed my young men to such and such a place. Now, the consequences of his lie are very severe, because Saul found out that he actually was taken care of by the priests of Nob. And consequently, Saul sent soldiers and then killed all of them. And David lamented that and said, oh boy, I made a lie and look what happened. 1 Samuel 22:22 documents that. So you can see from these examples that there are consequences. People in the Bible have lied, but there are consequences, severe consequences to lying. We need to be on our toes, be aware that there are many ways to lie. The fourth category I'm going to bring up is that after the sacrifice of Jesus Christ is the fourth category, is it okay for us to lie, or are we held to a higher standard of truth? And I think many of you already know the answer to that. And I'll bring up Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5, verses 1 through 4. This is a severe example. Ananias and Sapphira. They came before the apostles as everybody was donating their property and their land and everything for the benefit of the church in that area at that time. In Acts 5 verses 1 through 4, it says a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira his wife sold a possession. He kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your own control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? Why have you lied to men? Oh, you have not lied to men, but to God. See, all the others gave of their whole hearts. They didn't hold anything back. But Ananias and Sapphira did. Both of them died that day. They at least could have told them they held part back and not implied that they were giving all. But they both died that day as a result of the lying. So you can see from this example, there is a higher standard. Ephesians 4, verse 15. There is a higher standard. Jesus Christ held a high standard with the apostles. The apostles held a high standard with the churches. We have to follow suit and do exactly as they were doing. Ephesians 4:15 says, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Jesus Christ, or Christ. The Holy Spirit is in us. We're to act with reverence and give our best and our all to God, and not go a few verses down to verse 25, and not grieve the Spirit. Ephesians 4, verse 25, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. We have to remember that we are judged daily to the same standard as the resurrected population will be judged to on the day of judgment. We have to be ready for that. Matthew 12:36. Because on that day, every idle word that men speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. Matthew 12:36. And in the kingdom, lying will not happen. Lying will not happen in the kingdom. Zephaniah 3, verse 13. Lying will not happen in the kingdom. It says that the remnant of Israel shall do no unrighteousness and speak no lies, nor shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth. For they shall feed their flocks and lie down, and no one shall make them afraid. And realize too in Revelation 21:8. Revelation 21:8, the last scripture. What happens to those who continue to lie and don't even recognize they're lying and don't do anything about it. Revelation 21:8 says, but the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexual immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Brethren, let's strive to walk and talk in truth and in love together.